Good evening. My name is Scott Howell, and I'm in Mount Airy, Maryland. On a rainy Friday evening, October the 7th, 2005. And the rain's actually really picking up, but it's kind of comfortable out here. So anyway, I decided this is my third or fourth attempt at getting a submission done about myself, my career, and so on. And I thought I'd just go ahead and dive into it and see what happens. So, if it ain't interesting, go ahead and delete it. Wouldn't hurt my feelings at all. If you like it, great. I found a lot of the submissions really interesting and really enjoyed listening to all of them. I was born back in 1968. I was born blind. And to be honest with you, I don't know if they ever figured out really what the cause was. It was one of those fluke things, I guess. I'll get into a little of that as I go along. But I was mainstreamed in school all my life. Elementary school and junior high and high school and all that good stuff. I grew up in a family of, there's five of us all together, me and my brother and three sisters. Of course, my folks and the family dog. And I guess I had a pretty regular childhood. I mean, my mother and my father both didn't really ever prevent me from doing really anything. They wanted me to be, I guess, quote, normal, quote, you know what I'm saying? And they really didn't discourage me from doing much. I mean, growing up, you know, we used to ride bikes and had no idea where the hell I was going most of the time, but hey, you know, my brother and I go out and ride anyway. Mostly stayed in the front yards, stayed in areas where it was relatively safe. I mean, I had enough common sense not to go blasting down the street and wreck into a parked car, but we used to jump ramps along the curb. A lot of kids in the neighborhood pretty much accepted me, and that was good. And they'd set little ramps up along the curb, and I'd jump those things and just had a whale of a good time. We used to play even demolition bike, which was a great thing for them because it was a true contact sport. And you didn't have to see anything to hit anybody. And we had a lot of fun with that. I remember quite a few times putting the front wheel of my Schwinn back on. Just finger tightening those bolts, or finger tightening the nuts rather, and drive on. That was a blast. And I guess I did pretty well in school, elementary school, and yeah, certainly got picked on enough. And that was just par for the course, I guess, being different because I had a disability. But I generally got along with most kids. I had to obviously learn to stand up for myself, and I think I did pretty well in that department. And so I generally didn't get picked on too much. Sometimes it was rougher than others. But a lot of those challenges I really didn't run into until I got older, in high school. And either you got along real well with people or you didn't. And that's pretty much how that went. As far as what caused my blindness, I guess they really never ever figured that really out. Went through a lot of testing at the National Institutes of Health. And my folks, our whole family participated in a program, a study, trying to determine exactly what the cause was. And boy, that brings back a lot of memories. I can remember being quite young. I don't recall exactly how old, maybe 5 or 6. And a doctor my parents finally realized I really was blind because they had a doctor try to convince them I needed glasses, believe it or not. And these days, they probably would have sued him for malpractice because any of your glasses in the world was going to solve this problem. But I do remember, God, you know, a lot of, you know, did x-rays and all kinds of tests. They brought the whole family in and did every test known to mankind, probably, at least in that day and age. And I never did really find out what the results were of that. And I probably someday should maybe take the time to see if somebody could get out in the archives and dig them out. But I think probably the one thing that I remember the most about that was they used to have a cart that came around and brought us juice and cookies. By God, that was the highlight of the day. I used to look forward to that cart coming around. I don't, like I said, I don't remember a lot of it. I just remember bits and pieces of it and things my folks have said over the years. And in any event, you know, like I said, I pretty much had a pretty, I guess, quote, normal quote childhood. And did a lot of things. Did the Cub Scout thing and you know, kind of just pretty much had, you know, hobbies that most kids did, I guess, you know. In any event, I guess as I got older, I obviously just started getting a lot more things, a lot more outdoor activity type things. I guess I should mention that before I went to mainstream school, I actually went to a place called the Lincoln Center or Lincoln School. I can't remember which one the name or which the name was exactly. They long since shut that facility down and converted it to something else. But that facility catered to children with all types of disabilities. And I do remember that school, you know, some of the things we did there. I mean, that's where I learned how to read Braille and things of that nature. And actually, I met a friend of mine. I've known him for about 34, 35 years now. And in any event, so that's pretty much what I remember my childhood part of it. You know, when I started going to high school and so on, I got into the county actually had a program that was kind of more, I guess, sort of geared towards people with various types of disabilities, but they did a lot of outdoor activities, so I had a lot of opportunity to, you know, go camping and we did a lot of fishing and canoeing and rock climbing and a lot of really neat activities like that. And I had a lot of, met a couple of people there, real good friends of mine I knew throughout, you know, quite a number of years. Most of them I haven't seen in more years than I knew them, I guess, by now. But I guess the nice part about that particular activity that was sponsored by the county was is that at least they knew how to work with, or at least knew how to modify and accommodate people with various types of disabilities. And that was kind of nice because it gave me a chance to, you know, do some things that maybe otherwise have been a little harder to do. But when I, you know, in high school, I did also did some really neat things. I mean, in high school, pretty much everything was, you know, I guess I should mention the educational aspect of it. Everything was in Braille, and that was really good. There was some books on cassette. We didn't have computers then. Any computer? Well, I think the first computer we ever got, as far as being accessible, was the Apple IIe. And I honestly don't, I think that may have been 80, was it 84, 85? Might have been 85. I apologize, you know, as years go by, you tend to forget years and dates and all that other good stuff. And did have a resource teacher, they call him, and had different ones throughout, obviously, my entire school career. Some I actually had I had one particular one actually for most of my elementary through almost my beginning high school years before I actually had another one that within my remaining high school years, probably my sophomore year, I guess it was actually, I had a new one. So it was kind of nice to have the same person and, you know, to get to know each other's styles and so on. And And she continued to teach me Braille. Matter of fact, that's when he taught me how to learn the slate and stylus. Now, I remember one of the funniest things. Y'all will appreciate this one. It's a good one. I hated slate and stylus in the beginning because I didn't like writing stuff backwards and it was slow. And because I didn't learn slate and stylus until much later on, you know, I only knew how to use the Braille writer. Now, I could do the slate and stylus pretty good, but it was annoying. So, and it only worked for a very short while, but it was kind of crafty on my part, I must admit. And Ms. Furman, that was her name, she didn't give me too much help because she had to admit it was pretty ingenious on my part. I used to take and braille out the exercises that she'd give me on the braille machine and put the paper in the slate and punch the appropriate holes. Well, unfortunately, as smart as I wasn't smart enough to realize, I guess I was 12 or 13 at the time, I guess I wasn't quite smart enough to realize that if you really looked at it carefully enough, you could tell that the lines of braille didn't line up really with the holes that the slate would make. So all you had to do is put the paper in the slate and look at where the braille lines were, the lines of braille were, and you'd know that that wasn't done by a stylus. So that was pretty ingenious on my part, I have to admit. And so did she, but that put the end of that one, so I learned how to get, I got really proficient with a slate. High school was a pretty tricky time, I guess, I was trying to socially fit in and so on, and, I didn't really date much in high school, and, I think I went out on one or two dates, and that was about it. But I guess the good side of it was I learned real quickly to be who I, be myself, not to try to fit in with any one crowd. I think that's why I got along with, back in those days we called them the burnouts, the potheads, and I got along with the jocks, and pretty much, whatever group of people, I could get along with most anybody because I guess by the time I was 15, 16 years old, I realized that, I'm just going to be me and the hell with everybody else, And that's for especially you folks that are high school age. That's one piece of wisdom if I can pass on is, I realize everybody's looking to figure out who they are, at that age, but if you got a pretty good idea of who you are, you pretty much go ahead and just be yourself and don't worry about it. But I did when I was 14, I did work at a nursing home during the summer as a volunteer for the Red Cross, and that was a real eye-opening experience. I met some really interesting folks. I was responsible for entertaining the residents, really reading to them or playing cards with them, helping them get from their rooms to the dining area or dining hall for chow, and maybe sometimes I'd do morning announcements on the PA. That was always kind of interesting because I didn't really have anything to take notes with, so I'd have one of the gals in the office tell me what I had to say, and get on the horn and say it. Did a lot of other stuff there. Sort of odds and ends, helped out with various office kind of duties, and sometimes helped out in the kitchen with stocking shelves and stuff like that, and that was pretty neat. But I mostly enjoyed being with the residents because it gave me a chance to hear about various life experiences, and man, I tell you, I heard some pretty good ones. People that were living back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, it was pretty cool. And then I guess when I was about 15 or so, I got a paying job through this group called, PIC, Private Industry Council. Now, they didn't hire folks with disabilities. They hired pretty much anybody, but they would place you in different kinds of jobs. And I ended up at a local community college and did a lot of general office work, Xeroxing and answering phones and things of that nature, and I guess this is where I began to learn my advocacy skills. I must admit I'm not my own best advocate. But I can sure take up the gauntlet for somebody else and go crazy, you know. But I guess after that summer job ended, I think I did that 2 summers. I think I did. When I was in my senior year of high school, I wanted to get into the work-study program. Because you only had to take one class, you know, it was really cool. You take one class and then you head on to work, and that was a good thing. So I got asked to come back to work at the college, and that was great. That was a wonderful thing because I already knew pretty much what I had to do, and you know, this is easy. As a matter of fact, it was so good, my work-study teachers, they never came down to see me. They went to visit other students, but they never came down to PG College to check up on me. They said, we don't need to see you. You don't even have to come to class. We know you're doing good. So I was free to run, you know. And it was great because I had that opportunity to, take some college courses, which I did. And that was nice, too. I paid for those out of my own money. You know, I mean, my father worked for, you know, Navy. He worked for the Naval Intelligence. And my mom, I think she was running a flower business on her own at that time. So, I mean, they made too much money combined for me to get a loan to go, or a grant to go to school, or get any kind of financial assistance, actually. And so, I mean, I pay for school on my own, what schooling I have had. So, in any event, as I was at the college, you know, after I graduated, I continued to work there and take some classes. Couldn't take too many because I couldn't afford to. I had to work to pay for, you know, for these things and pay for other stuff. I started getting into helping students. You know, they couldn't necessarily get into classes they needed or what have you. Maybe there was too many people registered or they had some sort of problem with their bill or something. So I learned how to work the system and learn how to help these people get what they wanted. In most cases, I was pretty successful at it. I'd go and talk to people and say, hey, can you squeeze them in there or whatever, and I'd get overrides. I'd just go bug people and get things done, you know, and that was kind of neat because, I realized, wow, man, you know, if you just a little bit of effort and go a long way. And I used to go help them out and get their books, you know, if they had problems finding a book or whatever, I'd work with the bookstore. I learned how to make friends in the right places, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I did this until about 1989, and I decided at that point, this, you know, I wanted to do something else. I mean, I was pretty well sick of working at the college. I mean, it wasn't all you know, great barrels of fun. You know, I did have a temperamental supervisor, so I just kind of decided, you know, I'd like to do something else and maybe make some real money, you know. And you know, I figured it was just time for a change. So I worked with the college's co-op program and got a job at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration and NASA headquarters, to be exact. And I was probably the first person with a disability they hired, at least the first blind person, that's for sure. They didn't have any, very few people even had computers. When I went down there, I went down there for an interview, and that was kind of interesting. It was sort of like an inquisition. It was it's pretty funny. The guy that hired me was a real mellow type kind of guy, and they had this real aggressive gal that was their team leader, and she was the one who basically started asking all the really tough questions. What do you want to do with your life in 5 years? All kinds of crazy stuff. Ah, man, I tell you, that was an interview. In any event, when I started working at NASA, I basically was working as a student, student aide, and so I did kind of the same thing I did at college, you know. I answered inquiries, you know, answer the phone, and you know, people ask questions about jobs and so on, and I'd kind of answer those, and I'd, do the general Xeroxing, and because we were spread out over 7 buildings, because back in those days, you know, the 89, early 90s, very early 90s, We had about 2,100 employees, if I remember correctly. And we were spread out over, like I said, 7 buildings. So I walked a lot around Southwest D.C. And I kind of got the idea. I guess I should mention that the gal I ended up marrying, I guess we were dating, I guess right after I graduated high school. She's a little older than I am, but, you know, she and I started dating. And a friend of hers, mother, actually gave her some information about dog guides. I guess she was a leader dog, actually. And I looked into it, and I thought about it. And then I ended up, for whatever reason, I don't remember why, I ended up getting a dog at another school. And I won't mention that school, I guess, at this particular minute. And you'll kind of see why. I got my first dog in 91, Big Yellow Lab. So now travel downtown got a lot easier. And actually, part of the other reason I was kind of convinced myself to get a dog is, I really wanted a dog anyway, but I really got interested because I had a little situation with the cane on the subway one day. It was kind of, sort of, actually it was rather really amusing, but I realized that cane travel in a crowded subway system was getting to be a little difficult. And for those of you that do it, that's great. So, I mean, I won't even debate the advantages or disadvantages of cane travel versus dog travel. So, but somebody came running up the escalator, and I was getting ready to get on the train, and they came running around that corner at full bore, tripped over the end of my cane because I couldn't even yank it out of the way in time. I heard the person coming. There was nothing I really could do. They were going much faster than I could possibly have gotten out of the way. And they somehow yanked the cane out of my hand. And I thought, okay, maybe it hit the floor. Well, by this time the train was pulling out of the station, so I wasn't about to worry about where it was at the present second. I couldn't have heard it anyway over the racket of the train. Well, I started laughing because I realized that it really never did hit the platform. As a matter of fact, I pretty much had a good clue that cane went with the train. Well, sure enough, this lady asked me why I was laughing. She was so upset, and she said, "I can't believe you're laughing about this. This is such an awful thing." Well, I said, "Well, you know, it is kind of funny." I said, "You know, one minute you have a cane, the next it's gone off with the train somewhere." So, she did help me over to the station manager, and I went and sat in the office, and they actually tracked that thing down on the train. They could actually see on the board where this thing, you know, where the train was going. So they caught up with it about two or three stations down, and were able to retrieve it for me. And the guy brought it back, and he says, "I got some good news and some bad news." I said, "Yeah, what's that?" And he said, "The good news is I got it back for you." I said, "Yeah." He says, "I says great." And he says, "Well," I said, "what's the bad news?" He said, "Well, you're going to be walking with a little bit of a left swing now, because that thing had a heck of a bend in the end of it. It curved quite a bit to the left." So, I guess I had a real leftist cane there, you know what I'm saying? Anyways, so I ended up getting Jack was my first dog, and that made traveling downtown a lot better. And I got married in 92, and I worked with Jack for, I guess, up to 94, or was it 90, yeah, 95, 94, 95, I guess it might have been. In any event, I don't think his training was real top quality, and no, you know, that's why I won't mention the school's name. He was hit by a car. He wasn't injured, but we were crossing the street in the townhouse development where I lived. I used to have to cross this pretty hectic highway, and I had to walk along this highway to get to the bus every day, and some lady sideswiped him, and he didn't get hurt, luckily, but he didn't really want to work after that either, and school wanted him back, and I wouldn't give him back because I didn't feel that they did a particularly good job training him, and after all that stuff I went through with him, I said, you know, no way I'm going to keep him. And because there was no way the dog would have wanted to put him out in the field, and there's no way. In any event, enough of that, because you know, I'm sure I get all kinds of argument on this one. But In any case, it is what it is, and he's long since passed on, so it really doesn't make any difference anyway. So I got, and of course I still was working at NASA at the time, and I intermingle a few things here, you know, some of my dog experiences with the work experiences, just because they do all kind of correlate. And one of the nice things about having a dog was made travel a lot easier for me, and I'm a real fast walker, so that definitely was a big improvement. Now, as far as my career, I get back on track a bit here. Basically, after I got married, I really quickly realized I couldn't afford to go to school anymore, because I guess I really, for all the good my folks brought me up, I guess I never could have been in a position to even see what the future brought. And my wife and I bought a townhouse, and boy, that was the worst decision we could have ever made. And I tell you that right now, it was. You know, we had a real estate agent who really didn't help us very much. I mean, I thought he was a pretty honest guy, and I guess he was for the most part. But there were things I guess he might have been made of, not necessarily pointed out, but certainly back in those days, I guess in his defense, and real estate agents really didn't work that hard for the buyer. They were all about the sale, of course, because they had to make their money, and there was things they couldn't do. I mean, they couldn't obviously hide real obvious stuff from you, but they really couldn't go out of their way to tell you things that real estate agents can tell you now. Real estate agents are a lot more of an advocate for you now than they used to be, I guess is the way to summarize it. So in any event, it was just one of those situations where I couldn't afford to go to school. So, but I continued to work at NASA, and I started out did the general office stuff. I ended up getting into the disability program that was managed out of the human resources office back in those days. And of course, now it's in where it really should have been anyway, with the Equal Employment Opportunity Office, or the EEO office, as they call it. So so in the disability program, really wasn't a real important thing back in at that point at in the government. I mean, it was it was one of those things that they supported it, but it was sort of lackluster support. I mean, it I guess because they really had no reason to have one, because they really didn't have a large or, if any, real disabled community, they didn't really put a lot of emphasis on it. So the guy that actually was the program manager for that left a lot of the duties up to me, and that was fine. Hey, I ended up setting up some awareness programs. We did hire some individuals that were deaf, and so I ended up really running the interpreter contract. We provided interpreters for two people, yeah. And whenever we had events and so on, I would make sure we had interpreters there, and that was quite a an adventure. Working with a contractor is always an adventure, but we had a lot of problems with the contractor, and I had to actually find an alternative source, and we ended up getting another contract with those people, so that worked out really well. And it was really really raising the awareness. I actually formed the Disability Advisory Group, and that was actually partly due to the need for it, but also we were a part of a larger group called the Multicultural Leadership Council. And the Multicultural Leadership Council was made up of all the different ethnic groups. You had the African American, Native American, Asian American, actually they combined Asian and Islander, I guess, folks. Of course, the individuals with disabilities, actually had the, they had a women's group, and they also had a group of Caucasian males, and I, for life of me, can't remember what they called that group. It was sort of a funny name. I don't remember what they called them. Anyway, and actually all during this time, I should mention some of the technology that I had, because it was kind of interesting. When I guess I got to really step back in time, because I actually, when I guess around 87, 88 or somewhere around there, I bought my first 286. And I, actually prior to that, I was using a Toshiba laptop, and actually, I guess it was slightly before that, I had a thing called the Travel Talk, and it was made by a company in Arlington, Virginia. Automated Functions, Inc., or something like that. Ron Morford was the guy who ran the company, and Larry, you might even recognize the name. Some of y'all might. He's the guy who wrote software. And that's when I started dabbling in computers, actually, because I got, you know, kind of talked to Ron on and off and offered some suggestions or what have you, and it was really neat, and we were able to... even use the Toshiba as an external synthesizer. The Travel Talk, I should mention, was a NEC computer, and it had its own operating system and so forth. All was all self-contained. It wasn't running Windows or DOS back in those days, rather, or anything like that. And it had a synthesizer strapped to the bottom of it, and. Yeah, I quickly outgrew that thing. It was kind of fun. I actually tinkered a lot with it and figured out how to screw it up probably more than anything else. But when I started, when I got the Toshiba, Ron actually wrote a program that allowed you to slave it to a PC and use it as an external synthesizer. So that was really cool. So I did that for a while, and I... That was back in the DOS, I think I was running DOS 2.11 on that laptop. And that thing had, it was a chip built into the laptop with the software, right, you know, hard-coded onto it. And, of course, I graduated out of that real quick and sort of put my own floppies in there and load my own stuff. And I twiddled with BASIC and did some things like that, and even in college took a couple of computer courses, I really wasn't quite settled down enough to really get into programming. I actually really wanted to go to school as a broadcaster, but ultimately didn't do that. And decided I really wanted to do the computer thing, but, like I said, I got married and all that other good stuff. And all that kind of went to the wayside. When I first started working at NASA, I did bring my own equipment, and they eventually did buy me a Arctic synthesizer, and I was running Vocalize at the time. I didn't know much about ASAP, but when I found out about it, it was a really neat program, and Larry did a phenomenal job with that. And but actually, my computer interest did take me into running bulletin board system, FighterNet. Some of y'all remember that was pre-internet days, and that's how you exchanged electronic mail, and through FighterNet, and that was a really neat thing. I was a national mail hub, and I loved it. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot of stuff, and NASA actually did do a little bit of sort of pseudo-technical support stuff. They like I said, a lot of people didn't have computers, and the ones that did didn't know anything much about them, so I'd help them out with various problems they'd have. Eventually their IT department kind of really got developed, and they really got that thing rolling, so there wasn't much need for people like me anyway. You know, they had a team that could take care of that. And that was all good and well. But so in any event, I did work, you know, with the Multicultural Leadership Council to promote the whole concept of people with disabilities working, you know, in the workplace, and of course all the other various groups. And I mean, there's a lot of issues even still today that so many different groups face, and of course obviously even people with disabilities. So that was a real neat experience. I learned an awful lot. I learned a lot about you know, other people's points of view, which is, I think, a very important life lesson, and something that I learned so much. You never stop learning, but the one thing I certainly learned a lot of is when dealing with a situation is to look at it from more than just one angle, and not always let your emotions rule how you judge people. I mean, I learned very, very much so how to judge people as individuals and not as a group of people, or one person's actions is sort of typical of a group of people, shall we say. So, I've always prided myself on that. I've always been kind of like that. I've pretty much judged everybody as individuals. So, it helps a lot in your life. It's actually really, really important to evaluate people for who they are, and you know, not because of their skin color or their sexual orientation or their fact they're male or female or whatever. I mean, everybody has something to contribute, and you know, it's you can learn a lot just listening to people, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And also one of the other really cool things about you know, working with the Disability Awareness Program was that first of all, I got to be there when President George W. Bush signed the GW his father signed the ADA, and that was a really neat thing. I also got to go to various conferences and demonstrations on accessible technology. I think I saw one of the first versions of the Dragon Dictate when it came out, when it cost about $10,000. It was that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of really neat and memorable experiences. And I got to go on some retreats. I actually got to, as soon as I got married, actually, I flew down to Florida. Right after I got back from my honeymoon, I flew down to Florida for a conference. And not long after that, flew out to California to our facility out at Dryden Air Force Base. And it's there in Palmdale, California, and quickly realized I wouldn't like the desert too much. It was a little too hot for me and dry, but hey, it's kind of nice because the place we stayed at, they had happy hour from 6 to 7, and all the beer you wanted was free. Yeah, that was I guess they had to do that because there wasn't much else to do around there. It was out in the middle of almost nowhere. So in any event, you know, I started getting into other areas of human resources. You know, I did a little bit of other things, like helping to set up panels for rating and ranking applications. That's typically when you hire people in the federal government, you go through this whole process of not just getting applications, but you have to rate them and rank them based on their qualifications, and you put all the scores in the computer, and then you have a panel of people who are within that particular organization review those applications and select. They're the ones who actually do the scoring, and then, of course, we subsequently put those in the computer, and that's how you go about setting up your list of eligible people that they would interview from, that the managers would interview from. In any case, about, 94, 95, they started having me get into the area of benefits. And I started out learning the Thrift Savings Plan, which is the government's version of a 401k plan. It's a pretty important part of the retirement package for federal employees, at least new employees under the new retirement system. If anybody's really interested in all the grit on the retirement systems in the government, I'd be happy to tell you what you want to know. I've been at NASA, by the way, I'm finishing my 15th year, and the bulk of that's been in the area of benefits in the Human Resources Office. Basically, how I ended up in this area was because the lady that was doing all the other aspects of benefits got ill and was out of work for quite a while, and they had no one to take over the area, so I was asked to do this and had not a lot of training and not a lot of idea or resources to really know how to, I was going to do this, and I had to learn quick because with a lot of employees there was a lot of issues that had to be dealt with, and I took over all the areas of benefits. And in those days, all the rules and regulations and laws and so forth were in paper books, and although I had a scanner, it was not real good, and I honestly can't remember now the name of the software, and I remember it was a Hewlett-Packard scanner, but I honestly don't remember now the name of the, it was a DOS-based scanning application, and it was before OpenBook, and which that was all before Windows for that matter, and it was running this on a 486. I think, yeah, it was a 40. It's 486 or 386. I think it was a 486 actually. And no, I take that back. I think that actually was a 286 I had at that time. I upgraded from a old IBM 8088. That was the first machine I ever had there. As a matter of fact, a lot of people were jealous because I was one of the few people who actually had a computer. And I got one before they did. Some people weren't too thrilled with that idea, but hey, you know, what can I say? The one tool that we did have, I'd have to take my synthesizer and my software down the hall, and we had a CD-based tool that you could do searches on regulations and so on. So I'd use their equipment and load my software up and under DOS and use this fairly inaccessible application called PersonNet, and that was the best they had at the time. But a lot of stuff I learned from talking to people and taking some training and going to some conferences and that's kind of how I learned. And I guess it wasn't long after we started getting access to the internet. Now I remember accessing the internet through the modem through a local library, dialing in and using Gopher and stuff like that, and NASA didn't even have anything like that in those days, but we eventually did get internet access, and I gloss over some of this stuff, but I guess I did go, I think when we first got Windows, Windows 3.1, I was using something from Telesensory. It was, what was that now? Is there a window screen reader they put out? I think it was through Telesensory. And I apologize. It's hard to remember some of this stuff because it was long enough ago and I had so many other things happening in my world that all the stuff gets a little fuzzy, but I eventually did switch to WindowEyes when it first came out, which was much better than the other product, and it was a lot easier to use. And I tried different Windows programs, Slimware's, Windows Bridge, and I mean, all of it was very clunky, and in my opinion, you know, it was just that was my opinion. So I pretty much have used WindowEyes since. I have tried JAWS out, you know, just from other people's computers, and I didn't really find that to be any, you know, I mean, it wasn't any, I guess it wasn't any better or any worse. I mean, it's certainly, if it works for you, that's really all that matters, and I guess it doesn't matter what technology you use, as long as it does what you need it to do. But then slowly but surely, the information, like I said, the laws, the regulations, and so on became available through the internet, and that is a huge breakthrough for me. So I could actually go out now and look stuff up, look up the laws, look up the regulations. You know, I could see a real future for me in the benefits area because there was so much more available. I remember taking training courses, they'd hand out these massive books, and a lot of times I couldn't even scan them all just because they were huge. I mean, these books were, you know, hundreds of pages, and some of the stuff would never scan right anyway. But I am happy to say now in 2005 they've actually gotten much better. The government's done much better. The USDA graduate school is able to provide stuff electronically now, and that's a real revolution, if you ask me, too. I mean, that's a wonderful thing. But back in the day, if you couldn't really scan it very well, you just learned as you went, you know, and listened in class and worked with other people in the class, and that worked out generally pretty good. So that's pretty much how I got through. But now with the advent of the internet and the advancements in Windows, I mean, we're up to Windows XP now, and, you know, information is so much more available, and the software is better, and the tools are much better. So for a lot of people who are starting out, I mean, you really do have a nice leg up than compared to when a lot of people started out. So, I mean, it's the accessibility has come a long, long way, and we always want more, but I have to say that all things considered, things are much better. So as far as, you know, what I did in my career, I do handle all the areas of benefits. You know, the thrift savings plan, like I said, the 401k for the government. I handle the health insurance, life insurance, our flexible spending account, which is sort of like a medical, well, I guess it's sort of like what Aflac is, if you're familiar with that, and if not, it basically, it's a way to use tax-free money to pay for medical and dependent care expenses that aren't covered by a health plan. Of course, health plans don't cover dependent care expenses like child care and things like that, but this is a real wonderful benefit, and I've certainly made good use of it. As a matter of fact, for those of you that are federal employees, you can actually use your flexible spending account to pay for your medical expenses or vet expenses, and food, and anything related to your dog guide. So that's a real big deal, and that's actually anybody who has a medical savings plan like that. The IRS rules allow for that, so that's available to anybody, not just federal employees, but anybody who has a flex plan type arrangement can use their money to pay for their dog's expenses. And believe me, my shepherd eats some pretty expensive food. He has a problem with chicken-based food, and I had a hard time finding food he'd eat. And I'm pretty picky about what I put into my dogs, I guess. But and I should mention, I'm actually on my fourth dog now. I had a black lab from the seeing eye. He didn't work out too good, and so I didn't keep him more than a little over a year. And I ended up getting a German Shepherd, Nyack, who was an absolutely phenomenal dog. He still is a phenomenal dog. He's 11 now. He's been retired. I got my fourth dog here last June. I was in the same class as Larry Skukon. That was quite a class. That was my favorite class I ever was in. That was one of the best classes I was ever in. Great group of people. We had a lot of good laughs. Had a lot of fun evenings, didn't we, Larry? Yes, sir. Absolutely. I'm sure Larry hasn't forgotten them. Spent a lot of time in the pit, didn't we? In any case, Payne's a great dog, too. So that's basically what I've done for the last 15 years at NASA. I mean, I've been doing benefits. I don't really know if I, how much into the weeds y'all want me to get on what I do. I guess some of the things I'd like to mention, and why I think this advocacy thing kind of hit me at such a young age, is because I do that a lot now for employees. My duties don't include a lot of the things that I actually do. It is not in my job description, but I do them anyway, and it's probably just as well they're not in there. I've gotten involved in a lot of cases, some very complex cases, especially in the area of health insurance. Back before the days of HIPAA, I would actually be able to resolve insurance claims issues, get insurance companies to pay bills that they should have paid and didn't. I've actually had to take on collection agencies for employees and show them the light, because a lot of times they were doing things that the doctors would ask them to do when the doctor was actually doing something that was in breach of contract with their insurance carrier, like trying to bill employees for services that should have been billed. Well, I should say, how I explain it. The insurance company pays X number of dollars for a service, and anything beyond that the doctor can't charge them for, especially with an HMO plan. Well, doctors would try that trick. They'd try to bill the employee for what the insurance company didn't pay for, and that's illegal. And I had a collection agency wanted to take our employee to court, and all I did was call the collection agency and said, you won't do this. What you're doing is actually illegal. You can't collect an illegal debt from somebody. So I had them actually fax me a statement saying that they would place the account on hold and cease and desist any further attempt to collect anything until I conducted an investigation. So I got really heavily into the advocacy aspect of things. And that was a real highlight for me. I like to help people out. Although oddly enough, I'm not really a big people person, so I'm not really sure if it's helping the people. I think that's obviously one aspect of it, but I think the other aspect of it is I like a real challenge. And I'm pretty much pull the stops out and solve the problem kind of person. It's whatever it takes to get it done. I've handled a lot of work with a lot of employees going through divorces, since when an employee gets divorced, their spouse has certain benefits they're entitled to, and that gets pretty ugly. I also handle death cases and have to meet with families and reference to the benefits they're entitled to when when our employee passes away, and that's a really hard, that's a tough thing. And there's a lot of accommodation that goes into that too. I mean, I've actually had employees' families out here to the house, because they didn't want to come all the way down to D.C. And I've, you know, had to stay well past my normal working hours and meet with families. And, you know, those are some of the aspects of the job that aren't always so pleasant. You know, it's always tough to help somebody through something like this, or when their child is, you know, we had an employee whose child was killed. You know, a senseless thing. Just shot at a party. It was just a tremendous thing. And I had to work with him and try to get prompt payment of his life insurance claim to be sure that he could take care of the funeral expenses. You know, it's just one of those parts of the job that are, it's really, really rough. But some of the highlights of my job is I worked with a couple that was adopting a child. Unfortunately, the first adoption attempt did not go so well. They actually did get the child, and I think they had him for about a week or two. And the biological parent wanted the child back, and that was traumatic. It was awful. But they were able to subsequently adopt a little girl, and that was a beautiful thing. And it was neat being along with it. I worked with them for that for a couple of years. You know, I've worked with employees who have had children that had to be, I guess, you know, they were staying in a mental health facility because they had some depression. I think was one young gal's situation, and the insurance company didn't want to pay for that, because it wasn't cheap. But we worked with the company to make sure that was covered. And actually, unfortunately, I never did hear back from the employee, so I don't know how all that panned out in the very end, as far as, I guess, I'm assuming they let her stay there to finish the treatment, because they really wanted to move her somewhere else, and that just wasn't, I don't think it was a good thing. And I also work with employees who have children and have disabilities that are do not permit them to work. So you can cover a dependent child up till age 22, and after that, they're no longer eligible for health insurance, except in the case where a child is incapable, what they say is incapable of self-support. You know, they aren't able to work, so, or they're not able to make enough to basically, you know, live on their own, so we work with the employee to get them covered for either a temporary period of time or sometimes, in some cases, permanent coverage for the rest of the child's life. And I've also had the opportunity to do some other things that relate to accessibility in my job. And one of those, most notably, is working with NASA to bring all of their websites into compliance with Section 508, which is a law that basically, I guess to put it in a nutshell, requires the federal government to provide reasonable accommodation or accessibility to their electronic websites, computer systems, things of that nature. And not all of that has been 100% perfect. And, you know, NASA, I must admit, I can't say for all the, we have a lot of installations all over the country, and I'm only responsible for headquarters, but at headquarters, I can say they made a concerted effort. The contractor, I worked a lot with the contractor who did all the web development. Did a lot of testing for them, made a lot of suggestions, helped work up some of the websites and modify them. It's mostly all modifications that had to be done. And that was a really great opportunity. It really appealed to my technical side, so I really enjoyed that. I also did develop a website for our human resources organization, but that, unfortunately, never saw the light of day. That, actually, after I developed it, couldn't get anybody to review all the content. So by the time that I worked on that and got it completely built, it was actually taken over in a reorganization by another branch within our office. And And they never got it off the ground either. So to this day, I think it's lying out there on the server doing absolutely nothing. And I think the probability of it ever getting finished is probably slim to not. Probably a lot more to not ever getting done. That's mostly my career in a nutshell. I have sort of gone back to school, working on my math requirement, which is one of the requirements that has given me the most difficulty. So anybody has suggestions on how to get through college level algebra, let me know, because that's been a real stumbling block. A lot of the materials, you know, I had difficulty getting books. I mean, it's amazing. When I was in college, it was always a major event trying to get materials on cassette. They hired people to read the books. And after being out of school for, God, at that point, I was 12 years, because I've been working my math, you know, working on all the developmental math stuff, trying to get through all the basics to get myself back to where I could learn some algebra. I never took algebra in high school because I guess back then they figured I would never go to college, and it was never any encouragement or any push to give that consideration. So after being back after all those years, I saw that nothing really progressed in the area of disability, their disability department at the you know, community college where I worked, and it was something else, and it was just amazing. So I am working on that because I figure I do need to finish my degree. My job will probably come to an end here in the next 3 to 5 years. They're developing a shared service center, and a lot of the functions that I do, actually all the functions I do, will be transferred to the shared service center. All the duties, they call them functions in the government, or at least in our organization they do, and that's everything I do pretty much. I would actually have to compete for the job if I want it. They're not going to give it to you. You got to compete for it. But I really don't have much interest in moving to Mississippi anyway. All my family's here, my wife's family's here, and it would be just too much to uproot and move. I mean, I know she said she would, but that was very half-hearted. She really isn't interested in moving. And neither am I, for that matter. I don't think the climate would be conducive to my way of my liking, anyhow. I guess you know, if you're interested more about my, you know, what I do, or interested in the aspects of the federal benefits, you know, let me know. I mean, I do dabble in retirement, you know, do some answer a lot of questions. We actually have a contractor who does all the calculations and so forth for computing for what people would get when they retire, but I do answer a lot of the technical questions, and I get into other areas that don't pertain to my area directly, but I'm not one to hand an employee off to someone else if I can answer their questions, so I get into leave, areas of leave, and things of that nature. Because I really do have a strong sense of customer service. You know, I really believe in trying to make people's lives a little as complicated as possible. I figure people's lives are pretty complicated anyway, so anything I can do to make it a little bit better is, you know, means a lot to me. So, you know, and besides, there's nothing I couldn't stand more than not being able to get an answer, or being pushed off down the line through several different people to get something accomplished, you know, a question answered. I mean, sometimes you can't avoid it, but when you can avoid it, then all the better. I guess as far as some areas of interest and sort of hobbies I have, I'm basically a computer geek at heart. I am a ham radio operator, and call signs November 3 Bravo Yankee Yankee. That's N3BYY. I do a lot with computers. You know, I run Linux. I'm really a big, huge fan of Linux. And even more so now, I'm a really huge convert to the Mac. And I will submit something on VoiceOver. As soon as I come up with a little slightly better recording arrangement, I'm still working that out. And I told Larry I'd do it, and I will. And I think that'd be a really neat thing to demonstrate for folks. I still do some fishing and some outdoor activities. Unfortunately, my commute, I have a commute that's 2 hours a day. Well, it's 2 hours each way, so I commute like 4 hours a day right now. And that's pretty tough because we sold our townhouse almost 3 years ago and moved up here to Mount Airy and bought a single-family home. And my townhouse was a real fixer-upper. It was a lot of stuff you couldn't necessarily see, but it sure cost me an awful lot of money. And when I bought this house, I mean, in the real estate market around here, you're going to pay top dollar for a fixer-upper anyway. So I bought a house that needed some work. Not a lot, but I did do a lot of improvements to it. A lot of them I did on my own. Some of my hired contractors to do, like the siding and so forth, because I'm not about to do that. But that was a worthwhile project, and my house is worth almost $100,000 more than what I paid for it. So actually, it's more than $100,000. My house is, I wouldn't say necessarily double, but it's certainly worth considerably more than I paid for it almost 3 years ago. So it was a big plus. So any improvements I make is only going to help if I ever decide to sell. And so as far as what the future holds for me, I really am not too sure. I have been considering getting out of the human resources field, and maybe if I can manage to get my degree finished in the next couple of years, I may still major in human resources or something. I don't never really decided. I have some options. And I have a lot of areas that interest me, so I guess I just need to kind of figure out what it is I might be wanting to do, assuming that my job does go away and I don't find something else in the human resources field in the area here, because actually I understand the federal government is, or Office of Personnel Management, who is sort of the overall personnel office, how do you like that, for the federal government. They set the policy and so on, and rules that we have to live by. They're basically ones who pass down policy that's interpreted from the laws that Congress writes. How's that? I think they're going to start a government-wide personnel office that everybody would be basically signing on to, and having all their transactional work done by, I believe it's 4 or 5 agencies that all the other federal agencies would choose from. So that may put a lot of folks in the HR world out of business. But, you know, that still remains to be seen, since I haven't heard a lot about it. Just know it's in the works and that they've already selected their agencies. I guess that's pretty much really all I have. I used to be a musician. I played in a band for about 8 years. That was a lot of fun. I don't do that anymore. Been tempted to get back into doing something. I used to play bass guitar, actually, and played all kinds of music, all different styles. I started out actually playing in a reggae punk rock band because a friend of mine that I needed a bass player, and he was a guitar player. Actually, we played everything from blues to rock, but it was mostly reggae and kind of punk stuff, and it was a lot of fun. We did play a lot of blues though too, and then I ended up in a band that played predominantly rockabilly. That was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it immensely. We did a lot of gigs. We used to do parties mostly, because we actually all enjoyed those quite a bit. We actually practiced on a farm, And the guy that lived there, his actually his folks, they owned the house and the whole, well, they owned the farm. But he was going to school, and so he lived there, and his folks would love it when we came over. And they were an older couple. And they would just love it. And they'd just get so into us having these parties. We'd play other parties, but we'd even throw our own sometimes. We'd drag an old wagon out from the barn and set up on it. You know, drag all of our gear out, and we'd set up, and we'd just jam for hours. And, man, we'd have, we had at least 100 people there in a lot of cases. And his folks would be out there, and you know, they were probably the oldest people there. But, man, they just loved it. And we even had a Halloween party one year. And the guitar player, the guy in the house, he actually... his great-grandfather, I think it was the one who developed the Walker 45. It was a, I can't remember if it was a Navy or Army pistol, but he actually let me strap that thing on and kind of got the cowboy look going for the Halloween gigs. That was a lot of fun. We actually set up in their living room because it was kind of raining outside, and we built a tarp out on their patio so everybody could go out there and eat or whatever. And we set up in their living room. Remember, we dragged all the furniture out of that living room. And actually, we did that at Christmas and Halloween, because Christmas was too cold to play outside. And so we converted their living room into a makeshift place to play. And I mean, his mom and dad would help cook up all the food. And man, we just had a blast. It was a lot of fun. I think the largest gig we ever played was for some people down in Virginia. This was actually the second iteration of our band. You know, our guitar player, the guy who we were practicing on his farm, he went off to Costa Rica, so we found another guy down in Virginia, and he had a nice setup for practice and so on. And he had a neat family, and you know, he and his wife, you know, would actually feed us every Sunday. We'd come down for practice. We had practice two days a week, and Sunday we'd get down there and have supper with them, and it was a lot of fun. And I think the biggest party we ever played was 400 people, a rather wealthy couple that threw the party, and we didn't get paid for this gig, but we sure got to eat a lot of food and drink their beer, and it was a great time. They had a pig roast and all that good stuff, and it was a lot of fun. We did played a lot of clubs and stuff like that. We never really made any money doing it, and then that was okay too, because we just had fun doing it, and that was really our primary thing. So now here I am, all these years later. I got a wife and one kid, an 8-year-old boy, and two German shepherds. And generally having fun. So I really don't have much else, I guess, really to say on as far as my career and the technology I use and all that good stuff. But if you have any questions or comments, you know, please feel free to send me an email. And my email address is n3byy@adelphia.net. That's November 3, Bravo Yankee Yankee at Adelphia. That's Alpha Delta Echo Lima Papa Hotel India Alpha.net. ADELPHIA. And that's about it. So, hey, thank you for listening. And look forward to hearing more from folks on their career and life experiences and what have you. Like I said, I think there's a lot to learn from people and their life experiences. And I've really enjoyed listening to what everybody's been submitting. So keep sending some more. And I also have a few other things I'm going to send some submissions in on. If this recording arrangement works out well, then I'll definitely be able to start firing them in a little bit more frequently until I come up with something else. So, take care.